Okay.
Good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're on Daf Kuf Yud Beis. Did you start it all yesterday speaking about Maleches Kosher?
No.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Maleches Kosher. So the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph on Yud Beis says that there are Kesharim, Eveilu Kesharim Shechayavin Alehen. There are certain kesharim for which one would be chayav achatas for making a kesher, for making a knot, for tying on Shabbos. Why is this a malacha? So this is a malacha. Rashi makes a note of this from the Gemara on Daf Ayin Dal and Amud Bey. So that's the tzayode chilazon, those who had to fashion the nets in order to trap the chilazon, to extract the dyes for the various items in the Mishkan that needed to be dyed, the clothing, the curtains, and so forth. So they would have to make knots, so they would have to tie together the strings in the net in order to fashion the nets to catch the chilazon. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that there was also kosher that had to be done in connection with the urios. The urios that were placed on top of the Mishkan had to be connected together through tying different curtains, different width lengths of the curtains together. So therefore, we know that this was a malacha in the Mishkan, and hence, if one violates it, the chayav achatas. So the Mishnah says that there are certain types of knots that qualify, that are considered to be ksharim for which you would be chayav, and as we'll see, there are others for which you would not be chayav. Yes?
Just how Rashi on Ayin Gimel says, like Yushami, says that Topher and Korea. Oh, I'm sorry, kosher.
And we're talking about kosher.
Yeah, kosher, yeah.
Right, right, so we're talking about the tying. The tying, the difference between kosher and tofer is explained that kosher, you're taking two separate units and you're tying them together, but they're still two separate units. While with the tofer, you basically weave together two things that they become one, so that it becomes indistinct to be able to see them anymore as two separate units, as opposed to kosher. So the examples of a kosher, of a violation of the malacha of kosher, is kesher hagamolin, a knot that is tied around a camel's nose, in which they would then put the straps through the nose in order to tie up the camel to the trough that the camel would eat from. And then there was kesher hasaponin, basically boat knots that would be sometimes just described as sailor knots that were knotted on the side of a boat, and that knot remained permanently. The knot around the camel's nose remained permanently. And then other straps would be sometimes placed into those permanent knots. If, for example, you wanted to anchor the boat to the shore, so then you would put a strap, a rope around the permanent knot, and that rope would sometimes be affixed and sometimes it would be undone. So if we're talking about the kesher agamal and the kesher asaponin that are permanently placed on the camel's nose or on the boat's corner, then those are knots for which you would be chayev mita araisa. So the Gemara says, my kesher agamal and my kesher asaponin. The Gemara concludes that we can't be talking about the straps that were sometimes taken off, namely the rope, for example, that tied the boat to the dock, or the rope that tied the camel's nose to the camel's trough, because those were sometimes taken off. So ilay mekatra de kitri bizamama mekatra de kitri bizterida. If it was either the one that is being placed on the rope that's being put into the ring that's sometimes taken off, or the rope that's placed into the knot on the side of the boat is sometimes taken off, those are not meant to last forever. Rather, we mean the knot that is placed directly around the camel's nose, the distrida gupa, and the one that's placed directly on the boat. So here, I just brought in my handy-dandy picture book from the Mishnayos that I learned with my sons, where you can actually see what these knots apparently look like, or at least what the general picture should be. Here you have the camel, and you have the permanent knot in the camel's nose, and here you have the permanent knot on the side of the boat. And if we're talking about the non-permanent knots, so the non-permanent knots would be those of the ropes that are affixed to that knot, which are sometimes put on and sometimes taken off, both in the camel and the boat. Okay? So, the Gemara on Tkaf Kuk Yud Beis, Amun Aleph, indicates that there are times in which anat is going to be asa midaraisa. There are times that it's going to be asa midarabanan, and there are times that it's going to be mutter altogether. So the Gemara there talks about the knots or the straps around the shoe, different types of shoes, a minol or a sandal, shoe or sandal. So tani chad chayev chatas. This is the Gemara Kupyud Beis Amudalef at the last narrow line. There's one brisa that says you be chayev chatas. V'tanya idach. Another brisa says pata balasa. V'tanya idach. And the third brisa says mutar lechatzchila. So the Gemara says it's a kasha, both with respect to the minol aminol, kasha sandal asandal, minol aminol lo kasha. So then the Gemara says, no, it's not a kasha minol aminol, because we're going to reconcile when it is that it is an issa daraisa, when is it an issa darabanan, when is it mutar lechatzchila. Hadik tani chayev chatos, when are you chayev chatos, that's bidu shachpi. That's when it's a kavel or not. If it's a kavel or not, those are meant to remain forever, says Rashi. When the ushkaf makes a strap in the shoe, this is a permanent strap that's meant to hold the fiber, to hold the materials of the shoe together. So kosher is an inner strap that's not constantly fastened and unfastened. It's always there forever. Kosher keshe mitoko shelo tucho latzeis v'kayim liolam. It's going to be there forever. Patav al-Asr says the Gemara is bidra button. That doesn't mean that, yeah, because we're talking about nisidra button, that would be circular reasoning. It means we're talking about the straps that are fashioned by the rabbis. When the rabbis tie their shoes, they tie it in such a way that it is meant to last for a while, so they don't have to keep on tying their shoes every single day. They can take it off while it's still strapped together and then put it back on it again without having to unstrap it and to restrap it. But they don't make it a permanent type of knot, because if they're going to be walking in very muddy areas, says Rashi, Shvashasa Tit Matirino, so then they would unloosen it, and therefore it's not done in a completely permanent fashion. It's done in a way in which it has a little bit of wiggle room, a little bit of flexibility, so that they don't have the shoe so tight that it's going to be stuck in the mud and then it will come off of their feet. And mutar lechatzchila is b'nei mechuza. It's talking about the residents of mechuza, because they are very high, heavy-handed, and kind of elegant people who are very makbid, who are very solicitous about their dress, and therefore they want to make sure that it's exactly right and exactly perfect all the time. And if it has to be adjusted in certain ways, then they'll redo it. And it all depends on the occasion, on the location, on the coordination. And as a result, you know, like fancy people are always changing their clothing 100 times a day, right? They have the dinner gown, they have the morning gown, they have the afternoon gown, and whatever. So the B'nai Mechuzah also were very finicky, and therefore they were constantly tying and retying and untying their shoes, so it was not Kayim at all. So from Rashi we see that the sole criteria in terms of determining when is there a malacha de araisa of kosher is to what degree is it shel kayoma, to what degree is it meant to last forever. If it's meant to last mamish forever, it's never going to be undone, that's an issa de araisa. If it's meant to last for a long time but not forever, that's an issa de rabbanan. If it's meant to be undone on a regular basis, Rashi uses the lashon b'tzarech lahatiro arvis, which sounds like even within the same day it's going to be undone. So that would be mutar lechatzchila. Now, if you look in the Rif and you look in the Rambam, so an additional criterion is added. The Rambam in Perek Yud of Hilchos Shabbos, the Rif on our sugya, the Rif explicitly interprets these three cases as being broken down in a slightly different way. The first case, it says the Rif is also midaraisa, the Kabbalah case, because it's a maisa umat, because it's something which is done in a very professionally expert manner. Plus, it's also a kesher shel kayama, plus it's also meant to last for a very long time. Second case of the Rabbanan is that it is a Kesher Shel Kayama. It's meant to last, but it's not a Maisa Umar. It's not something which is done with a tremendous finesse and with a tremendous skill, and therefore that's only us to meet Rabbanan. And the Rambam says, by the same token, if something would be a Maisa Uman, if something would be done in a way which is professionally very exact, but would not be meant to be a Kesher Shel Kayama, even though professionally it's very expert, it's not meant to last for a very long time. So says the Rambam, that also is an Issa Derabbanan, that also would not be usher on a deraisa level. Where did the Rambam get that from? If the Rif's understanding of the second case is that the second case is a Kesher Shel Kayama, but not a Maisa Uman, and that's only usher midrabbanan, so where did the Rambam get the case where it's a Maisa Uman, but it's not a Kesher Shel Kayama, that should be only usher midrabbanan and not usher on a deraisa level? So if you look in the Rambam, this is the Rambam Hilcha Shabbos Perek Yud Halacha Beis. 1 second. The case that the Rambam is basing himself upon. 1 moment. One moment. I think that somebody here gave the source for the Rambam in Halacha Beis. Yeah. So that's the Gemara here. Bechumarta de Katri Inhu. Okay. If you look a little bit further on the Gemara on our daf, so we had the kasha from Minol. And then we said that there was also a kasha sandal, right? That there were certain types of sandals that are asa midaraisa, some that are asa midarabanan, and some that are muta l'chatchila. So the case of patra v'alasar in the Gemara says the Gemara b'tuchumarta dekatri inu. These are sandalim. These are sandals of regular people. Where the says Rashi. She'ein ritzuos kibuos behen ayidei uman, where the ritzuos are not placed ayidei uman through an expert artisan. Elohim asman koshim osam bechumarta bi'alma bekoshin matirin u'parmish miskayim shabbos achodish, and sometimes they last for a long time. So the Rambam derives from this. This is the case of what? This is kesher she'enok shokayama, which is done through an uman, which is done as a maise, uman. So the Rambam understands that this is actually a, not like Rashi. The Rambam understands that this is a case where it is basically a maise uman, according to the Beis Yosef. So the Beis Yosef understands that according to the Rambam, that case of Bechumarta de Katri Inu means you're doing it in an expert fashion, but you don't want it to last for a long time. That's exactly the opposite of how Rashi understands it. But the Vilna Gaon says that no, the case that the Rambam is basing himself upon when he says that if it's a Kesher She'enel Shel Kayama, but it has a Maisa Uman, that is only an Issa D'Rabbanan, is the case of that the Gemara discusses of the Katri Bizamama, where the rope that is attached to, say, the camel's mouth, to the rope around the camel's mouth, that then is attached to the trough that the camel is eating off of, or the rope that comes out of the boat that's attached to the dock. So that has to be done in a very professional, expert fashion, but you don't intend on leaving it there for a very long time. That's probably a better source. First source, Rashi's explanation sounded reasonable to me. But so the Vilna Gaon gives this as the source for the Rambam. So just important to understand where these different categories are coming from. And then finally, says the Rambam, if you have neither Kesher Shel Kayama, it's not going to last for a long time, And it's also not a maise uman, and it's also not done in a very professionally expert fashion. So only that case is going to be mutter lechatzchila. Now the problem is that we don't really have a very good sense, even though we have this wonderful picture book, but we don't really have a very good sense of exactly how these professionally performed knots were in fact manufactured. We don't have a very clear sense of what type of knot qualifies as a ma'isa uman and what type of knot would not qualify as a ma'isa uman. My general rule of thumb would be that if I do it, it's not a ma'isa uman because I didn't have Boy Scouts training. What do I know about making knots? And if somebody who's like an artisan does it, so then it would be a ma'isa uman. Now, also, the other question is, who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like Rashi? That it all depends on how long it lasts. Do we paskin like the Rambam? So if you look in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Shin Yud Zayin, we're machmir for both shitas. We're machmir that if it is a ma'isa uman, even if it's not a kesher shokayam at all, then it's something which would be prohibited. And we're also machmir that if it is a kesher that is shokayama in any way at all, meaning that say Rashi's middle category. Rashi's middle category is that even if it's not meant to last forever, but it's meant to last for more than a little period of time, that also is going to be pato balasa, that's also going to be asa midrabanan. So we're machmir that even if it's not a maise uman, but it's meant to last for more than a trivial amount of time, so any knot would be prohibited. What's considered to be more than a trivial amount of time? So Ramah quotes two deos. One day is more than 24 hours, and the other day is more than 7 days. From the Pashtus of the Lashon of Rashi, where he talks about that the B'nai Mechuzah would be Tzarech Lahatir or Arabis. They would have to untie it that night. So that would seem to support the daya that any knot that will last for more than 24 hours would be a problem, even if it is not a ma'isa uman, and that is how we paskin la halacha, that at least lechatchila we paskin that the knot should be a knot, if it's you're going to do it on Shabbos, that should be neither a ma'isa uman, nor something that lasts for more than 24 hours. So again, that gets us to the question of how do we define a ma'isa uman? Because in order to do a knot, let's say I want to tie my shoes. So I have to tie my shoes in such a way that it will be neither a ma'isa uman, nor will it be a knot that I intend to last, or even that most people, according to the Be'er Halacha, says that even there's an issue of kind of like a butler daito here. If most people have it last more than 24 hours, then I don't necessarily have the ability to navigate around that if I have a different approach. So it has to be something that I don't intend to leave for more than 24 hours, and which in general is not left for more than 24 hours. Yes, Yitzi?
Oh, from before. No, yeah. I was just wondering why it would make a difference if we know exactly how they made the knots.
Oh, it would make a difference because we know what a ma'isa uman is.
Ma'isa uman is
in other words, we want to know what constitutes a ma'isa uman. So the Shilta Gibarim on our Gemara, Shilta Gibarim says that it's very difficult, even the Shilta Gibarim says, to figure out what exactly qualifies as a ma'isa uman. But one thing that he says we know qualifies as a ma'isa uman is if you have Shnei Ksharim Zelzeh. If you have two knots, okay, you have to borrow a term from a completely other context, you have a knot bar knot. You have a knot on top of another knot. You have two knots on top of each other. So that is, by definition, considered to be a ma'isa uman. That shita is quoted by the Ramah in Siman Shin Yud Zayin, that you always have to be machmir whenever you have a double knot, that's considered to be a ma'isa uman. Now, the Shari Tshuva so tempers this a little bit. The Shari Tshuva says that because of Birka Yosef B'Glilo Seinu, and in certain regions in Eretz Yisrael, Pashan Aminag Likshor Shnei Kesharim, that they would sometimes allow for two knots to be tied together, b'chagurasa, on a person's belt, a shebe masnav, that would go around his loins, she'enu shel kayam who shall help you. Because of the fact that that's something which is so not shel kayam at all, that it's you can't possibly consider that to be shalhedya, that nobody really has in mind that that's something which has any permanence or any great significance. For example, you have like a bathrobe robe, a bathrobe belt, where you have, you know, a very loose-fitting, sort of somewhat bulky bathrobe belt that you're fitting around your robe, and you might fasten it once, and then just fasten it loosely on top again. aware, there's never, it's not really anything that's done with any great expertise or expectation that it's going to really be tremendously strong. So that type of knot, without explicitly permitting it, would seem to be in the same realm of what the Shari Tshuva quotes as being something that people in certain regions would actually utilize. Now, what then does a person have the ability to do with respect to their shoes? So they could do, they could wear on Shabbos shoes that don't have laces. How many people here are wearing shoes that don't have laces? Isn't it a much easier life when you have shoes without laces, right? Yes, absolutely. Okay, good, fine. That was like, you know, one of the great moments, I think, in world history when they created shoes that don't have laces. Don't you agree? Just like completely transformed quality of life, certainly for me. But let's say that you are wearing shoes that do have laces. So if you're wearing shoes that do have laces, so what do you have the opportunity to do? So there is one very important heter in this entire discussion, and that is the heter of aniva. In Siman Shin Yud Zayin Sif Hey, Shulchan Aruch says, aniva mutar delav kesher hu. If you have just a bow or a slip knot, that would be permissible because that is not considered to be a kesher. Where is that from? Spelled out, I believe, here in the Gemara in Kuf Yud Gimel. In tomorrow's daf. Was it aniva on Kuf Yud Aleph? We have a little bit of a discussion. One moment. Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir has a shita that if you have if it's very, very loose. So Rabbi Meir says that if you can pull out a kesher with one hand, and that really is descriptive, certainly, of an aniva type of situation. I don't know that the word aniva is explicitly utilized in the Gemara. Rashi has over here. Rashi says, I'm sorry, it is there. Yeah, and the end of Rashi says that Bari Babi Achadbavi Achvi Demaracha Aniva Rabbi Meir Mal. So he asked the question about what would it be Aniva according to Rabbi Meir. That's an Ibaya within Rabbi Meir that ends with a Teku. So it's very difficult to paskin based on that particular Gemara. But later on, the Gemara indicates that you have, if you have a chevel that is going to only be done through aniva, let's see what the Gemara says over there. Chevel dili shenipsak. If you have a chevel, you have a rope of a dili, that was put together with a bucket, lo yehi koshro, you shouldn't tie it together with a knot, ela onvo. Rather, you should only put it together with a bow. So the Gemara there indicates that if it's only a bow, so that's not going to be a problem. Rabbi Yehuda was gozer, aniva atu kshira, but we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. We paskin, as the Gemara says, aniva b'kshira lo michalpa, that we're not worried if we're going to permit aniva, that we're going to permit kshira. But the Mishnah Brura quotes a chumra from the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says that even though aniva is not considered to be a knot at all. Now remember, if I say that it's not a knot at all, so then it's not even in the category of kesher she'eno shekayama. It's not a kesher altogether. Once it's not a kesher altogether, so then it wouldn't matter if it was left for more than 24 hours. So the Magen Avraham says that might be true if we're talking about an aniva alone. However, that is not true with respect to if I have a kesher echad lamata and then an aniva on top. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes Kasu Achron, that's the Magen Avraham, Hadinogin Heta Bekesher Echad Lamata. If I have a knot on the bottom and then a bow on top, Hainu Davka Kesha Asli Lahate Bo Bayom. That would require that it be there for less than 24 hours. Mishum Da'ayi De'anivai Gabi Kesher Adayi Enu Nikra Ma'isa Umot. It's not considered a Ma'isa Umot, so you're allowed to keep it. However, if it's going to be a Balahim Imhi Lakaima Le'ez Izman, but if you're going to keep it there for more than 24 hours, like you're going to have the egget around the lulav and leave it in that state for a long time, that then you would not be allowed to make a kesher on the bottom. You would only be allowed to do an aniva if it's going to be a kesher with an aniva. That qualifies as a kesher, as a bare-bone kesher. And that would be something that would only be permissible if it was less than 24 hours. Mishabura also adds, V'rashi laso shtei anivo zel gavzeh. That if it's only an aniva that we're talking about, and there's no knot whatsoever, so even if I have two anivos, even if I have two bows, one on top of the other, that would be okay. So notwithstanding that the Rama writes that afilu imasa kesher echa lamata nogin bo hetzer, that even if there's a knot underneath the aniva that we are knowing that we hold it's permissible, that's only if it's going to be for less than 24 hours. So this is very important when it comes to tying shoes. I actually brought shoes with laces today. So if you have here a shoe with a lace, so basically, let's line up the laces, make it nice. Oh, forget it. Okay, so basically, you could go like this. You can make a knot, and then on top of the knot, you make a bow. This is a bow. The bows are not that tight. If I just pull on it, the whole thing kind of comes apart, and that's a good test for the fact that it's not a double knot. On the other hand, if I make a double knot, so that already is considered, as the Shilta Giborim says, and this would not be the type of light sash that's being described by the Shari Tshuva, we're machmir to consider this to be a ma'ase umar. And even when you try to take it apart, it's annoying to take it apart. Like, you know, it takes like a few seconds or so, you know, you gotta get your fingernails involved, you know, so it's, who wants to make a double knot anyway? The truth of the matter is, if you make a double knot, you have more of an incentive to just kick it off your shoe, because who wants to undo it, right? At the end, it's difficult to undo. So if you are the sort of person who just makes a knot in a bow, and then you leave it for a long time, you kick off your shoe at night, and you don't generally undo it within 24 hours, so that would really be a serious issue. That would be a shiloh. But if you generally are conscientious about undoing it within 24 hours, so even if it should so happen that you didn't undo it on one occasion within 24 hours, it would still be okay. But if you're the person, type of person who normally keeps it there forever, or for certainly for more than one day, that could be potentially problematic. Even though there is a shita that if it's less than 7 days, it's not the end of the world, but we generally are machmir for the 24-hour period that is mentioned by the Rama, that's in Sif Aleph. But we try to be machmir, we generally are machmir, for the first shita, which is mentioned by the Rama. Where else does this potentially come up? So this issue comes up in the realm of ties. What about ties? Can you wear ties? Can you put a knot? Or can you do the knot of a tie on Shabbos? Is that considered to be a knot? So here you have a machlokes aposkim. Some are machmir, and some are makel. But Moshe Feinstein supposedly was makel. He said this is not the type of knot that we're talking about. We're not necessarily, no reason was provided with respect to this particular mesorah of Rav Moshe. But it could be that because of the fact that ties, for sure, are the type of garments where it's unheard of for anybody to keep on for more than a 24-hour period, because nobody goes to sleep, you know, at night with their ties. So maybe that might be, you know, one consideration. Some people never undo the actual knots of the ties. That's a little bit weird to me. But nonetheless, that's what I'm told. There's also a shita quoted by the Avnei Nezer that if you're not really bringing like two materials together, the whole thing is not really good. Like if I have a two straps of a shoe, the truth of the matter is that it's all one string that you put into the shoe to begin with, but it becomes kind of two straps by virtue of going through the different rings. So that's bringing together two separate pieces of string. Here it's the whole thing is kind of like, you know, one piece. So some say that that's not really considered to be a kosher, but some say that you have to be machmir on ties. And it really depends on the way that you do the tie. And they invoke kind of the Rabbi Meir rule, that if I pull it, like Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah has this rule, right? If I pull it, you know, with one fling and the whole thing comes apart, so that wasn't really a kesher, right? So some invoke that rule that is it something that if you pull apart with one fling, it comes apart. So is that really a kesher? So there are two ways, really, of doing ties. So here I have my exhibit. I figure, why should I undo? You know, it'd take me a long time to redo it, right? I undo the tie that I'm already wearing. So here I brought in just kind of like a sample exhibit tie. So here, I really have no idea how to do ties, but but one way to do a tie is that you just kind of like strap it, or that you just sort of strap it around without necessarily. So right now I haven't really made any tie whatsoever, right? Then I bring it up, right? And now I'm really making kind of just one kesher at this point, right? I slip it through with one kesher. Looks very respectable, right? Okay. So now, if I wanted to try to, one of them is like one way of doing a tie is like a Windsor knot. You could do it in a regular. I don't know what any of them mean. So here, if you, if I would just take the narrow part out, then the whole thing should, in theory, come apart. We'll see if that happens. So here, I took it out. So you see, like now it's.
Well, I mean, there's another way.
It's basically, you know, loose in this fashion. Let's do that again.
You can do
that.
You can do it a different way.
You can do it. Why? You have to.
What about tying with one?
If you tie it, like, you know, in a more fancy schmancy way, right? Like, let's say that after I put it around once, then I bring it up again, take it through the top, sort of fasten some sort of a knot this way, then I go through it a second time, right? Is this Windsor?
I think that's a half Windsor.
Like a half Nelson. Oh, I say half Windsor. Right? And then I go through. So now, this might be more problematic, because when I undo it, right, I pull it out once. It worked better this way. So anyway, leaving aside that demonstration, some say that if you make it in the more simple fashion where you can undo it, you know, all at once, so that would be a permissible tie. But if you're not going to be able to undo it all at once, so then it turns out that somehow you got more than one knot in there, and that would be more problematic. Yes?
Why is the winding around of the tie not considered a knot, but the first, when tying one shoe, the first time you put the two strings together, not actually matter making a knot, when you put the...
Winding around by itself does not create a knot. It has to be kind of a, it has to be that you're actually forming some sort of a firm connection which is going to make it difficult to unravel. So for example, when it can help us, lulav, when the Rama writes about a person who didn't tie, you know, the egged on his lulav before yantiv, and now there's a malacha of kosher on yantiv, and how are you going to go about doing it? The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Zayin, talks about this. So the Rama says the one way you could do it, you could just wind it around and wind it around and wind it around and tuck it in. He says that's not considered to be a kesher in any fashion. Just wind it around and wind it around, tuck it in. That's not even an aniva. That's a nothing. Okay, so that itself doesn't create a problem. There's a question with respect to, let's say I have twist ties. So if I have twist ties, so the motion of the twist tie is not just a winding around and then tucking in. It's a bending motion where I'm basically enclosing the item by virtue of bending one thing into another thing, so that causes it to be sealed. So some say the twist ties could potentially be a problem. There is here as well a Kabbalah quoted in the various contemporary Halakha L'maaseh Sfarim from Rav Moshe Feinstein that I think somebody quoted in the name of Reuven Feinstein, but he's quoted as saying that twist ties he thought were okay. Now, why is it that twist ties should be okay? Why is it twist ties maybe should not be okay? So the Rambam is the one who would create the possibility that twist ties would not be okay, because the Rambam suggests that a twining type of motion also falls within the category of kosher. That's the Rambam in Perek Yud Sifches. He says, "Haposel chavolim min achutzin min achelef o michutei tzemer," that you are twining the ropes together. Michutei pishtan o chutei seir k'yotzeben areisa toldas kosher v'chayev. This is considered to be a tolada of kosher and you be chayev. Question is, where did the Rambam get this from? It doesn't appear in our Gemara. It does. The Migdol O says that it's from a Yerushalmi, and others say they can't find the Yerushalmi. They don't think that the Yerushalmi exists. But the Rambam does bring this down the halacha. So there are two questions. One is this really the halacha, given that we don't really have such a Yerushalmi? And the second question is, does this apply to twist ties? So some say that this shouldn't apply to twist ties because in the Rambam's case, this is what creates the formation of the rope that you're putting together these various hedge bush thorns and strings and chutei tzemer, chutei pishtan, and chutei seyar, and kind of twisting them all together in order to create a rope. Well, here you're not creating anything. It's just a kind of like a wrapper. You're just kind of like putting a wrapper on top of food. And it's not the creation of some exalted rope or anything like that. So because of the fact that the whole thing was not intended to be the creation of some definable object, and also because it's not nearly as sturdy as the chevel that the Rambam's talking about. So when we're talking about something which was created to be so incredibly temporary in nature, or Moshe even has a lashon somewhere in a different context, where something was created to be undone very, very regularly and not stay at all, then for sure that doesn't qualify even as an issur derabanan. So it could be that maybe on that basis, that's why the olam is no egg more of a heter with twist ties. But if one wanted to be machmir based on this Rama with respect to twist ties, so there are ways in which you can take off a twist tie that happens to be on a food product before Shabbos and just twist it around once. If you twist it around just once and not multiple times, so then you don't have this issue at all. Now, one of the big questions that arises is with respect to doing galila on a Sefer Torah, sometimes when there's a sash, the way in which galila is done is through a knot and a bow, the way that we tie our shoes, right? So how could that be permissible? So a number of poskim say that the only basis for allowing it is if it's going to be undone within 24 hours. If you do it Shabbos morning, and that's the safest, it's going to be you Shabbos mincha, so you don't have a problem. But the problem is, what about if it's Shabbos mincha? So if somebody's going to undo it, take the Sefer Torah out and undo it after Mariv, so then also you're not going to have a problem. That's usually not the case. Usually it's going to be kept around, unless Sunday is Rosh Chodesh or something, it's going to be kept for a couple of days before the Sefer Torah is used again. So the general consensus, despite the fact that the Shmir Shavuos Kilkos, I think, mentions that many are not nizer about this, but the general approach is, first of all, don't have those types of sashes. Just have, you know, kind of the metal clamps that can be attached together, which is not a malacha altogether. Some say use the Velcro, right? Some assume that, Velcro is certainly not a problem of kosher. Some have a little bit of a discussion about Tofer v'Korea with respect to Velcro, but if you assume that Velcro is not a problem in that domain, so then the Velcro is generally assumed to be okay. And if you happen to have the sash or a wimple or something like that, so what the poskim, or the wimple is anyway done this way, what the poskim recommend is that you just twirl it around, right, a number of times, then you tuck it in. Just like we mentioned with respect to the egged on the lulav, so you could do the same thing. What is the basis for those who hold that it would be okay? So the basis might be that we can relax sometimes a kosher that would only be us on a derabanan level if it is for the sake of a mitzvah. That seems to be the conclusion that the Rambam derives from the Gemara in Shabbos and later on in Daf Kuf Nun Zayin, where he said you would take a gemi and they would put it, they would use it to tie a small earthenware vessel that was approximately a tefach wide in order to measure the width of a roof that was attaching two buildings where there may have been a dead person in one building to see if there was a poseach tefach so that the tumah wouldn't be carried over from one building to another building. And the Gemara concludes from here that we see that it's a mutter to be involved in kosher for the sake of a mitzvah. But the way that Rashi understands that Gemara, Rashi just says, well, this wasn't a kesher shokayama; it was just being done on a very temporary basis that they were using this this piece of rubber in order to effectuate the tie. So I think the Mishagura points out that according to Rashi, you don't have a raya from that Gemara that any type of kshira would be a mutter for the sake of a mitzvah, because that's a type of kosher that was anyway a mutter, because according to the Rambam, the only consideration is whether it's a kesher shukayam, and if it's not a kesher shukayam altogether, it's het to gomor, so therefore we don't see that there's any special dispensation from Rashi for mitzvah purposes. We only see it according to the Rambam, who understands that that was a case, I guess, where it was sort of a kesher uman that wasn't shukayama, and it was nonetheless permitted for mitzvah purposes. So according to the Rambam, that otherwise would have been a problem with the Rabbanan. So we see that you could relax the requirements. So those who are mekel in part based on a reliance of the conclusion by some Rishonim, like the Rambam from that Gemara, that for mitzvah purposes, that's what the Rashi, the Rambam writes, mutal likshar kesher sheino shekayama l'dvar mitzvah. You're allowed to be kosher kesher sheino shekayama l'dvar mitzvah. So that would be a basis for being mekel in this type of circumstance as well. Another shaila to bear in mind, a common every day, every Shabbos circumstance, is garbage bags. Garbage bags also, when they're tied together, even if you tie them the same type of loose knot that you would tie around a shoe, where you would do a knot followed by an aniva, followed by a bow, you're not intending to undo it within 24 hours. You're intending to drop it in the garbage can and leave it for the garbage people to pick up. Even they're not going to undo it. So it's going to remain in place probably until it reaches the garbage dump many days later. What happens when it reaches the garbage dump? I don't really know. But whatever happens, even if it gets undone at that point, it's certainly going to be much more than 24 hours later. So there, too, you have to be careful to make sure, number one, you don't fashion a kesher, which is a maisa uman type of kesher, like a double knot that you certainly can't do. Some say that an overhead knot, we're talking a fancy language here, an overhead knot, if you're taking from the material of the garbage bag and doing a fancy overhead knot, that's a very strong knot that's also considered to be a maisa uman, that would also be problematic. So what you have to do is you have to take the two ends. If you should really buy the garbage bags, you're trying to figure out which garbage bag to buy in the supermarket, right? So it's good to buy the garbage bag that have just two separate ends to them, where you're not using the top of the garbage bag to wind around itself. According to the shita that holds that would be a maisa uman, but you take two separate ends from the garbage bag and you bring them together and you can make a single knot, and that would not be problematic since it's only a single knot, so nobody considers that to really count as a kesher of any significance. So therefore, better yet, you just do an aniva. You do a bow, which for sure one would be mutter. The Mishnah Berurah holds that even a bow on top of a bow is mutter, but you have to avoid making any type of maisa uman or even a kesher with an aniva on top, which if it was left for more than 24 hours could potentially be problematic. I'll just conclude with one other interesting halakha l'maisa application of the discussion regarding kosher. And that is in Hilchos Chalitza. So it's interesting because in my own youth and upbringing, I don't consider myself to have been amongst those who are the most proficient in not making. I generally found myself to be challenged when it came to really making good lasting knots on my shoelaces. It was, and my mother used to always joke, and my sisters, that if this was something that hadn't been outweighed by certain other abilities that I had, I never would have gotten past kindergarten. Sort of as a curious fate of Hashkacha, when I took over as director of the Beis Din and we started to perform a chalitza, so I became the person who was charged with making the kesher on the foot of the yavam every single time that we do a chalitza. And that is one of the most difficult and convoluted types of knots that you can be called upon to do from the standpoint of Allah, Baruch Hashem, through tremendous hashkacha pratis. I became a knot expert. After I moved over to yeshiva, and I was no longer serving as the menahal of the Beis Din, so we had a few chalitzas here in this room, actually. I asked if maybe somebody else could do the knots now that I wasn't menahal anymore. I said, no, you got to do it always. So even since then, over the last several years, I still am the guy who does all the knots and all the ties for the chalitza. What is the rule there? So it's interesting because there's a rush in Mitzvah, in Perek Mitzvah Chalitza, who quotes from Yerushalmi, it's a machlokis in Yerushalmi, about the way that it should be done. Could somebody hand me a Maseches Yevamos and the Rabbi Chanina, and there in the Yerushalmi, says that you should do it as an aniva. You should do the chalitza not as an aniva, so that it will be easier for the yevama to be able to undo the knot with one hand. Even though mi'ikar adin, based on the Bavli, we don't have any special hiddur that the chalitza shu has to be undone with in terms of the knots being undone by hand. It could be really bitten off by the yevama if she was a gidemis. But we are machmir to see to it that the woman actually undoes it with her right hand because of the fact that the Yerushalmi has this notion that it ideally should be done, that she could do it with her hand. And she does it if she's a righty. She's supposed to do it with her right hand and her left hand not even helping out. So one shita says that it should be done through an aniva. That's the first shita quoted in the Yerushalmi. And then, let me just get the mitzvah chalitza here. This is in the Rush. Mrs. Chalitza, okay. So the Rush over here quotes from that Shita. And then the Rush says, wait a second. This isn't. Hold on. Should be accompanied by Osamek in the Korban Asano, but it doesn't seem to be over here. Here it is. Okay, fine. Fine. Okay, good. So so the Rush says, this is in Sif, different. This is in Simon Dalit in the Rush. Okay? So the Rush says that Vinagwa inna the Kosha Bekesha Gomer. Despite the Shita in Yerushalmi, he says, our minhag is that we do a kesha gamur. Why? To kaim alam, because we paskin in Masechah Shabbos, the aniva lak shiri. So he said from the Gemara, we quote in Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, aniva is not considered to be tying, lenyan Shabbos. So since aniva is not considered to be tying, lenyan Shabbos, so we want to make sure we have a proper shira in the chalitza shoe, so that it's being worn with a proper fastening, and that you're taking off a shoe that was properly fastened to begin with. So he says, even though we don't find in our Gemara that there's a requirement that we have to make it easy to remove with one's right hand, nonetheless, since miu nagu olam cannot be a Yerushalmi. So we paskin, we're machmir for the Yerushalmi. So how we machmir for the Yerushalmi that says you should do it through aniba? And on the other hand, the Rosh brought as well that it should be done through a it should be done nagua inna the kosher bekesha gomer, that it should be done as a kesha gomer. So the Korban Asano says that he quotes the Maharshal. Maharshal amadeinu domet the hasam yalpinu mimikdash. When it comes to Shabbos, we derive from the base of mikdash that you should have a kesha shokayama. And in a kesha gomer, but bachalitza mishum mehadaku. Bachalitza just has to fit tightly on the foot, and therefore we don't really care or shouldn't care about the nature of the kesha. A kesha v'aniba kamahadik. So the Maharshal held that it's enough to have just what we would call a kesha she'eno shokayama, right? For Shabbos purposes, which according to the Ramah sounds like it's not a kesha altogether. Magen Avraham is machmi. We should consider it a kesha for purposes of not having it more than 24 hours. You have one followed by a bow, right? The kavanas rabenu ikal amemar. So then the Korban Asano goes on and says, well, it could be that kai dafka aniva lechud, about keshev aniva agaba moded de behani. It could be that he's not disagreeing necessarily that that we should have a kesher. He's just saying that we should have a kesher and an aniva. But on a nehigun, what is our minug? And this is what's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. This is the way that we do the chalitza. B'shnei k'sharim zel zeh. The way we do the kshira for of the foot, the shin bone of the yavam, where we tie the shoe directly over, you know, the ankle and underneath the knee in that area, right, of the yavam's foot. So we do tukshar zeh be'achakach aniva. Plus we do an aniva. What do you gain? What's the point of having tuksharim and then an aniva? So one of the great chalitza practitioners I've always brought along whenever I've done a chalitza is Rabbi Elia Lichter. He's also a Mesader Get. He's the father of Rabbi Yaakov Lichter, who is the now most prolific get writer for the Bezdin of America, but he learned from his father, Rabbi Elia Lichter. So Rabbi Elia Lichter is also a chalitza expert. So whenever I would get up to tie the knots for a chalitza, so he would always scream, and when I would get ready to tie the first knot, he would say, "Fast, fast!" So he speaks Yiddish. He doesn't really speak English, so always he's yelling, "Fast, fast!" Like, it's taking you so long. I got to go already. I have other things to do, you know. So he meant strong, fast. Like, fast in a Yiddish sense means do it strong. The first tie, the first knot should be very strong. But the Shulchan Aruch brings down that the second knot, the second tie, should be softer. Why should it be softer? Should be softer because we want the Yavama to be able, remember, we're asking with one hand, that with her strong hand, she's going to untie the knot. So if it's going to be a strong double knot, she's not going to be able to do it. You saw how much I was struggling to undo the double knot on my shoes before, right? So that's going to be too difficult. So therefore, we make a loose second knot on top of the first knot. So that's what the Korban HaSanal explains. This is how we're able to satisfy all the shittos. The nearer the Hainu time. If we would make two knots, that would be very strong knots, then she wouldn't be able to undo it with her right hand. It would be too difficult to undo the knots if it would be a strong double knot. But if it wouldn't be bechozik, if you're going to do the second knot very, very lightly, so that's more like the Shari Chuba's case that we quoted before. That's not really a kesher altogether, if it's just like kind of a loose double knot type of situation, right? Okay. Osin aniva agaba. So that's why we add the bow, the extra bow on top. Number one, it satisfies the Yerushalmi. But number two, it helps to round out this kesher. So even though it's a loose double knot, now by virtue of having an extra aniva, it's going to be a real knot. And this way, we're able to have the proper, the ksharim are able to stay on the bottom part of the leg. Even though the second knot is not going to be that strong, it will be considered to be a legitimate bona fide knot by virtue of having the bow on top nearly the eye shape a minute. And this is, of course, despite the fact that this is one case where the kesher is certainly not intended to last for 24 hours, not even 24 minutes. Okay, I got it.